As succinctly as possible, he reviewed what had happened while he was at the window, and apprehensively relayed to them his impressions of the new Doc.
So he look at you and you draw back?
You got it.
Maybe he not know you looking, but got hunter instinct for being watched and just tame.
Which doesn't sound like Doc, right?
Phew, whatever else, Doc no hunter.
So this new personality that has overtaken him has that kind of instinct. I don't like the sound of that. If he was making a new him to protect the old Doc, then it's not likely to have traits that he never had before.
Sounds to me like you're coming round to the idea of him being taken over by someone else.
I'm not exactly saying that. I'm just going to keep my options open on this.
Right now, it doesn't matter which of us is right about who or what Doc's become. It's more a matter of what he's going to do now that he is someone else. That's what's going to shape the next few hours. If he's had them take down the tables and the cover, then they sure as shit aren't going to chill us.
Which is something to be thankful for.
Right. But the bigger question is, what does he have in mind for us now? And how long before we find out?
The longer we have to wait, the longer it gives our systems to clear out the shit they fed us to make us pliable. Assuming that you guys feel the way I do, I'd say it's clearing rapidly. It didn't need to be long-lasting, as we were all supposed to be sacrificed by now. And the sooner it's completely expunged from our bodies, the sooner we're 100% in terms of thought and reflex. I guess we're all a little stiff, and maybe we should work on that. Assuming that they feed and water us soon, so that we don't lose strength through thirst or hunger, and that the food and water is not tainted by more herbs, then we'll be as ready for them as we ever could be.
So it may benefit us to be caged like this a bit longer?
Assuming untainted food and water, then the longer we're here, the sharper we can get, and the more we can work on our physical problems.
Biggest problem, this.
Jack proffered a handful of skin and fur.
Exactly. We could be here for weeks getting stronger, but it doesn't matter shit if we don't have clothes and weapons. Clothes alone, even. No way we could fight effectively and try to keep these damn furs around us.
Doc's got his clothes back. Maybe he'll get us ours. If he does have plans for us, then it figures that he'll need us covered and able to move about in the cold.
Kinda depends on what his new plans are, and just how we fit into them.
You can't be serious! We can't trust him just like that! For the Lord's sake! We were about to offer him up to the Almighty and shield them! No way would they trust us!
Doc smiled at the Inuit chief's ranting.
Since when did I mention trust?
What?
Listen to me, son. There are some advantages to being resurrected in a strange man's body, no matter how old and frail it may feel to me. I know things. Don't ask me how, because I don't know how. I just know. Point is, I know about those people you got holed up in that hut. I know that they're hunters and fighters. And maybe more importantly, they're survivors. They'll do what needs to be done. What my old ma used to call pragmatic. You offer them a chance to live, and they'll take that rather than the alternative, no matter what. Maybe you can't trust them like you'd trust your own people, but you can rely on them not to sign their own death warrant.
Thompson looked at McPhee. The medicine man returned the puzzled look twofold, shrugging his own confusion.
I mean, they're not gonna risk their own lives if you offer them a chance of prolonging them by doing this. It's what they do anyway.
Thompson nodded. He still wasn't too sure of what the Lord's messenger Joseph Jordan was actually saying some of the time, but he figured that he was getting the general idea.
All right. If you say they'll go along with this, then we'll include them. The Lord alone knows that we'll be outnumbered, so any extra warriors will be useful.
But don't give them their blasters until we're on the trail, just to be sure.
You'll not trust what I say, despite it all.
I say we shouldn't trust them.
Fair enough. You may be right at that. The first thing to do is get them their clothes, and then get across to talk to them.
Better to talk first, then give them back their clothes if they agree.
Would you agree to anything if you had to stand naked before those who had asked you?
He's right about that, all right.
Reluctantly, almost as though he felt he were in some way handing over all his power and acquiescing on just this one small point, Thompson agreed and called for one of his set guards. The Inuit warrior, having been thus detailed, hurried to where the one-time sacrifice's clothes were being stored and retrieved them, hurrying from that hut to the nearby dwelling where they were incarcerated. As this happened, and Doc watched him through the open doorway of the chief's hut, he consulted the Kron he kept on a chain in his vest pocket. Considering the lives these people seemed to lead, he marveled that it was still operational.
Give them a little time to get dressed, regain their dignity, and then we'll head over and talk to them.
His eyes were focused on the guarded hut. He caught sight of a man in spectacles staring out at him, and their eyes met over the distance. The old man grinned. It was an expression completely unlike anything that had crossed Doc's features before. The face at the window disappeared.
Dark night, he scares the shit out of me.
J.B. pulled back from the window.
What is it, John?
Mildred was at his side in an instant. The armorer was shivering as though they had just pushed him out of the hut with no skins or furs.
Doc, he's up to something over there, ordering them about as though he runs a vill. He looked right over at me as I was watching him, and his eyes seemed to go right through me. Except that they weren't Doc's eyes. It was his face, but a stranger looking at me.
But what's he up to? Does he even know who we are anymore?
Christy was about to speak, but held back as she heard the sound of feet approaching the hut. As the door was opened, an Inuit tribesman stumbled over the threshold, almost obscured by the piles of clothing he carried in his arms, his short stature making it difficult for him to see over the top of the pile. He dumped the clothes in the middle of the hut and backed out warily. From the door, he was covered by the guard with the sharps. Not wanting to risk anything at this stage, the companions held back until the door had been secured once more. Once they were locked in, Ryan moved forward to poke at the pile of clothes.
All ours, and all here. But just the clothes. Everything else has been stripped. Blasters, ammo, med supplies, food and water. Guess they want us to cover up for something, but they don't trust us any more than that.
Guess we'd do the same if we were them. Might as well go ahead. I reckon we won't learn anything about their plans, or even about what has happened to Doc, until we're ready to face them.
Ryan indicated his agreement and gestured to the others that they should pick their own clothes from the pile and once more get dressed. Jack pulled out his patched camo jacket and slipped his hands expertly into all the hidden places where he had secreted his small leaf-bladed knives. Every last one had been found and removed.
Shit. Fucker's too smart.
You can say that again, Jack. They kept my scarf.
This seemingly innocuous item of apparel, made dangerous by the weights sewn into the ends that enabled it to be used for a number of offensive purposes, had been retained by the Inuit, along with Jack's concealed weapons and their more overt hardware. The Inuit may want them for something, but they were obviously taking no chances until they had obtained agreement.
So what do we say to them?
Yes. Whatever the hell it is, we don't have a choice at this moment. So short of agreeing to cut our own throats, we just smile and nod and say yes, until we figure a way out of it.
Trouble is, if Doc is carrying any kind of memory of what he was, and he'll have already told them that.
Yeah, that could be a problem.
It was in many ways a lose-lose situation, no matter what the Inuit wanted from them. They settled to wait. Once more, the feeling of being in a position where they had to be reactive rather than active, almost passive in the face of a potential danger, weighed heavily upon each of them. A sour silence descended on them and marked the slow passing of the Kron. Then, just when it seemed that the tension of waiting would snap nerves that were already frayed to the point of ultimate tension, they heard footsteps approaching the hut. Deliberately, none had wished to watch from the window. They faced the door, spread out across the floor of the hut, all on their feet. It was a defensive position, making it hard for a single attack to take them out, and something they had fallen into without having to discuss the matter. From the sounds emanating from the exterior, they could tell that there were three people approaching the hut. The footsteps halted. They heard the scrabbling of the lock, and the door was flung open to reveal Thompson McPhee and, taking center stage, Doc Tanner. Yet this impression that it was Doc was soon dispelled. The way the man strode into the center of the room, stopped dead with his hands on his hips, and lazily looked around him, revealed that the character of the figure facing them had changed. There was a light in the eyes that showed a shrewd native intelligence that would not be given to the reams of verbiage Doc inflicted upon them. The way the eyes narrowed as he surveyed the interior of the hut also revealed that here was a man less open, more guarded and dangerous than the Doc they had known. His stance was easy, but held that hint of coiled danger, like a sleeping snake that could strike before there was a chance to move. It was the same shell as Doc, but a man of a very different hue inside.
I'm expecting you'll be a little shocked to hear me talk like this. Not perhaps as shocked as I was myself to be here.
Briefly, he retold the tale he had unfolded for Thompson and McPhee, noting the looks of incredulity that spread across the expression of both Mildred and Christy, and the studied inscrutability of J.B. and Jack. Ryan seemed quizzical. When Joseph Jordan had revealed his identity, Ryan spoke up.
And we're supposed to believe you, just like that? And they're supposed to believe you, too?
You can believe what you like. I don't ask you to believe anything. I'm telling you what I know to be true. You can either accept it or not.
There are things he knows about our history that are known only to the few. Things that are only passed down to the medicine man and the chief. Things that he couldn't have known, unless what he says is the truth.
Ryan wasn't so sure. He had heard Doc outline a brief history of migration in the region to the Inuit chief only a few evenings previous. The Inuit didn't know the true history of the man. If they had, they would never believe it over the truth to which they chose to subscribe. The times the man claiming to be Joseph Jordan spoke of were before Doc had been trawled for the first time by the Kronos Project. Such events could have made the newspapers of the day, been talked of and written about widely. A man of Doc's erudite nature could easily have come across them during his first lifetime in the pre-Dark era. If this were the case, then, given the circumstances, it wasn't impossible to imagine that Doc had retreated so far into his madness that he would construct a new persona that called on things that could defend him in the current situation. The things Mildred had told them, about the way men's minds worked, would make this feasible. Certainly Ryan found it a whole lot more believable than transmigration of the soul. More importantly, if this were the case, then the real Doc was still in there and could come back to them, was perhaps even now finding some hidden way in which to assist them. After all, it didn't sound as though they were about to buy the farm.
Okay, I guess that kind of convinces me.
Good, good. Look, will you all look a little less like we're going to gut you like fish? Relax a little. I've got something to say to you.
Warily, casting looks to one another, the companions reached an unspoken consensus to uncoil and listen to what the man had to say. Christie was the first to sit, and the man who called himself Jordan followed suit. Within seconds, they were all seated on the floor, and the tension in the atmosphere had eased. Even the two Inuit seemed to be a little less on edge than before.
You're not to be the sacrifice. There's something not right about it, and that's why I was sent to these people, to stop it.
It seemed to occur to neither Jordan nor the Inuit that this may have been something to do with Doc Tanner, still lurking, a prisoner within his own body. It didn't, however, escape the listening companions, but now wasn't the time to raise the matter. Instead, they continued to listen in silence.
And to make something better happen. Something that would serve the purpose of these people and prove to them that the good Lord has not deserted them. He needs a sign from them of their obedience and servitude before he will deign to help. And in an act of good faith for their faith, he has sent me.
Jordan was beginning to ramble. It was perhaps a sign of Doc trying to break through. Jordan shook his head violently, as though clearing it of clouded thought.
This sacrifice was wrong. It would not have appeased him, and would not have brought good fortune to the tribe. He demands of them something greater, something that befits their debt to him as their creator. And he has sent me to guide them on this. It is a great task, and I would ask for your help in fulfilling it, as we will need all those who can fight.
Wouldn't it anger the Almighty if outsiders were to assist? Wouldn't it sully the purity of the sacrifice?
That's true. Why would the Almighty?
Because he would not have sent me in the first place unless he felt you needed help. I am from the original stock of this village. It was my people who came to this land and brought the Lord to these people, joining with them to make that tribe what we see today. That is why I was sent. In the same way, the Lord has sent ye here, so that ye may become one with the tribe and join in the fight. You will become servants of the Lord, as we are. You, McPhee, will attend to this. It will happen soon. For we must move soon, before the storms worsen and the seasons change once more.
He turned his attention back to the five people who sat in a semicircle in front of him.
There is a large vill on the trail between here and Anchorage. Anchorage, as you now call it in these days, which was known in my day as Fairbanks, and is still. Back in my day, it was a place where trappers and traders would meet to sell their wares, and to drink, and whore. From what I hear, it has changed little, even though the world has much. It will be no great shame to wipe the godless pit of hell from the face of the earth. These are souls who should welcome the embrace of the Lord, and should be grateful to be offered to him. But I doubt if they will. They are many, and we are few. More, if you are with us. We must trek to their settlement and purge them with the fires of righteousness, sacrificing them so that the Lord's servants may have greater longevity.
What you mean is, we get in a firefight where we're outnumbered so that we can chill a few unsuspecting trappers for your purpose.
You can choose to look on it that way if you wish. You would be wrong, but you could see it in that manner. Can you honestly say that you have never done the same?
Mildred cast her mind back over the things that had happened to her since she had been unfrozen. It seemed like decades. During that period, there had been many occasions when she had been forced to choose between the lesser of two evils. Times when even that had been denied her, and she knew that she was doing something of which she may not be proud. But better to know that than to die, which was the only alternative. Was Jordan presenting her with a case that was, in essence, any different? Knowing this, there was little opposition that she could offer. Looking at her compatriots, she could see that Christy felt the same way. For Jack, these distinctions didn't apply. J.B.'s stony expression told the same story. There were times when, despite the closeness that had arisen between them, Mildred felt that J.B. was a stranger to her, an unknown territory whose thoughts were forever closed. Which left Ryan. The one-eyed man had a sense of conscience that sometimes troubled him. He tried not to let it show, but she could see that the sense of responsibility he felt as leader sometimes clashed with the equally strong sense of right and wrong that he carried in his head. But pragmatism would emerge triumphant. Despite the morality she carried in her head and heart, despite the ideals for which she would have fought and argued in the days before Skydark, despite all of these, she didn't give a damn about the greater good right now. All Mildred really cared about was staying alive and keeping her friends and fellow travelers alive, no matter what it took.
No, I guess you're right.
Good. I'm glad you agree. For if you did not agree, then you would be against us. And if that were the case, then I can't guarantee it would be worth keeping you.
From now on, they would have to follow what Jordan said, or risk being killed before there was a chance of escape. Jordan got to his feet, Doc's tender bones betraying him, making the rise a little more difficult than he would have liked.
It would have been better if the Almighty had given me a better body to work with. But it will have to do.
Doc Tanner was a good and wise man. A brave one, too. You could have done a lot worse.
I shall take your word for that. I shall have to. Thompson, McPhee, how long before they can be received into the faith?
I can do it tomorrow morning, as soon as the sun rises. It's late now. The dark will soon descend. And there is some preparation I must do. In the meantime, we can make plans so that we have an attack ready to unveil to them, and to our people.
Aye, that sounds a good idea. But don't be taking too much upon yourself, man. You are, after all, only the medicine man.
For the briefest moment, anger flashed across McPhee's face, so swiftly that it was possible to believe that it was imagined. They all saw it, and noted the pause, before the medicine man regained control of his emotions.
Of course.
The two Inuit rose effortlessly to their feet and left without a word. Jordan paused at the door and looked back over the assembly.
I'll be seeing you.
What do you think, Lover?
About what? Do I think Doc's finally left this world behind? Do I think we should get ourselves into some kind of stoop religion? Do I think we should go and virtually chill ourselves attacking a bill bigger than this just because of a madman's vision?
I guess that just about covers everything.
Fire blast. You might as well ask me if we have any choice. Because that's all it comes down to.
And the answer is no.